Welcome to episode 8 of the Conversations on Death podcast. My name is Lorena and I'm your host for the Conversations on Death podcast. Death is the one thing we all have in common, yet it's one of the most taboo subjects in our culture. So I invite you, dear deathling, to join my guests and I as we dive deep into everything death related, and in the process, learn about the many lessons death has to teach us, the living. Hello, everybody. Okay, first things first, if you didn't hear the last episode, I announced that for the month of June, me and a dear friend of mine who is the founder of Death Positive NYC, her and I are going to be hosting a Death Cafe every Thursday this month at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's just a safe space to talk about death with strangers and friends over Zoom. So if you're interested and you want the link to sign up and get the Zoom password and all that stuff, you can hit me up at conversationsondeathpodcast@gmail.com and I will send you all the details. Today, I'm super excited about this episode because these ladies are amazing, super funny, and I have been seeing this card game, all over the place since I started getting into the death positive movement and doing research for the podcast and all that stuff. So if you have no idea what the death deck is, it's basically a card game and you can play between two people. You can have teams of up to 10 players. It has multiple choice questions and open-ended questions. And basically what it is, it consists of thought-provoking fun questions, 112 cards to be exact. And those questions encourage the players to share thoughts and stories that surround conversations around life and death. So since last week's episode was all about advanced directives and planning for your care in case you can't make those decisions yourself at the end of your life, which happens to make this the perfect game for you to bring out and start having those conversations with your family or friends. And I know you're probably like, a card game where we talk about death. I know it sounds weird, but trust me, this card game is freaking awesome. And I know it sounds kind of dark and depressing, but it's actually filled with humor and a bunch of thought-provoking questions, even questions that you may have never asked yourself. Because I think I mentioned this in the episode later on, but you know, I think about death quite often. And even in these questions, in these cards, there are questions that I've just never thought of before. So it's a really fun game. And I hope you enjoy the interview with Lisa and Lori. All right. So ladies, thank you so much for joining me today. I've kind of been seeing you everywhere. So when I first started doing research for the podcast and seeing who I wanted to have on the show, I started the death deck just started popping up everywhere on Instagram, on Facebook, on different Zoom meetings. And I thought it was such a refreshing way of approaching a conversation that tends to be really depressing, I guess, for most people and avoided. So I love that you guys include humor in it. And last Friday, I finally got my death deck in the mail. And it was funny because my boyfriend never gets excited about anything, but he kept being like, oh, is your death deck going to get here today? And like when it got here, he was like, oh, let me look at it. So we sat down and we looked at some cards and talked about it. But I think it's such an amazing way to approach this topic. So thank you. Thank you for being geniuses and coming up with this. So first I wanted to get started and just kind of hear about your journeys that led you to work in kind of the end of life field. And maybe we can start with Lisa first and then Lori.
Well, thank you, Lorena, for having us on today. And I'm excited to hear maybe a little later if you and your boyfriend had any good conversations from the death deck. But so I am a licensed clinical social worker. And for about the last 15 years, I've been working in end of life. I've worked in hospice and I work in the emergency room setting as well. And so throughout my career in both settings, I witnessed people not being prepared for end of life, not having important conversations, not having legal documents completed, just in general, avoiding the topic. And I see how hard that is on both the person themselves and the family, especially the family, and even the medical professionals who would really prefer to know what that person would have wanted in terms of planning for their care. So that's that piece of it. And then I met Lori when I was her late husband, Joe's hospice social worker. So Lori, I'll let you go from there.
Yes, I was one of those families. We were probably more prepared than most. In fact, we thought we were really prepared until it came to those final days when, well, actually the final months, when we realized that, you know, the details are the things that we lacked. You know, we had the advance directive. We had talked, you know, years back before we, you know, started a family when we were first getting married to get all the, you know, the paperwork in place, but it was just the paperwork. We weren't continuing to have discussions. We weren't continuing to have conversations. And when, you know, he got his diagnosis of pancreatic cancer, then we really didn't want to talk about it because, you know, that was taking away, you know, the hope and the drive. We didn't want to talk about it until we had to talk about it. So, yeah. And with hospice, you know, I was, you know, the typical, I don't know what hospice is. I don't want to know what hospice is. And I really wish, you know, in those final months I knew, because when hospice came in, you know, it was 2 weeks and 2 days. You know, I look back and wish I would have, you know, been able to utilize hospice and have them there for a lot longer, because it would have been so, so helpful. Because that, you know, the dying process is, if you haven't gone through it, you haven't seen it, it's so confusing and chaotic. And it just, you know, it just led to a very disruptive ending for my husband. So Lisa came in and was the hospice social worker and, you know, just so helped me navigate those final days. It was amazing to have somebody. I mean, the whole hospice team was incredible, but it was amazing to have somebody, you know, that I could really talk to and would, you know, gently explain what was going on, because everything was confusing. You know, why isn't he talking? Well, sometimes you lose the ability to talk. Well, I didn't know that. And, you know, helped me with my two young children. They were, you know, 3 and 5 at the time. And it's like, I don't know how to deal with this. But fortunately, Lisa was there to help me and continued to be there for months thereafter, helping me with the grieving process. And it was really at that time that we both realized that, you know, I was that person that, you know, that she gets frustrated with in a gentle, soft way. But, you know, but, you know, it's like, why didn't you talk about this? You know, and it's like, I didn't know what we didn't know. And so, you know, that's where, you know, the back and forth of our conversations was, you know, well, you know, people really should be talking about this. And why aren't we? And how can we help to get people to be able to be more comfortable with starting these conversations? And thus, the death tech.
The fact that people don't have these conversations is mind-blowing to me, because yes, you can have everything in order. You can have all the paperwork, the stuff that makes you feel like, oh no, I have it. Like, I have it under control. But then the piece that's always missing is the conversation. And so what was the process like for you ladies, when you decided to start this? How did it come about? I mean, like, oh, let's create a game. Like, how does that happen?
Well, Lori had been working on a memoir that is soon, perhaps, to be published. And so her and I became friends. We kind of had a little hiatus of a year or two after I was her hospice social worker. And then she reached out and said, hey, I'm working on that book we were always talking about. And so we met up, and then that relationship turned into a friendship. And so I'd say a couple of years, right, Lori, we just, did a lot of stand-up paddleboarding and reviewed notes on her book and, you know, developed this really strong friendship. And then also this conversation about how do we get this message out to people. And then it was Lori who came up with the idea of like, well, why don't we make some cards? Why don't we like give people some prompts? And when we started looking at what was out there, we found that there are some great tools. I'm sure you're familiar like with the Hello Game and Go Wish, where you, there's a lot of open-ended questions and they kind of give you prompts to start thinking about some of these topics. So we saw that that was already out there. But we both felt like that reached a very specific population. And we were looking for how do we reach people who wouldn't have this conversation? And how do we reach like general people who want to have a fun but more important conversation with family and friends? And so that's when the kind of the format of the Deaf Duck came to be. We definitely wanted to make it more accessible and playful and funny. And that it took some work. I hope, you know, there's a couple where I'm like, oh, we tried really hard on that one. but I think the overall tone helps people just release a little bit of the heaviness of the topic by chuckling a little bit, even though a couple might be dad joke type chuckles.
Yeah, but it's still funny. And that's the whole point, right? Keeping it lighthearted. Right. Yeah. And how long did the process take to come up with all the questions? Because there's 120 cards, right?
112.
Okay.
Yeah. So it took, you know, it took us about a year from first talking about it to working on the questions to, you know, getting some test groups together and realizing, you know, a lot of them are multiple choice. And we originally had, you know, four answers you could choose from. And excuse me. And we realized that, you know, that was too wordy and too much to sort of take in a sort of gameplay way. So we, you know, cut those down and tried to cover, you know, all of our bases. And so, you know, we spent a lot of time, you know, working on that and making sure that, you know, we were very happy with the finished product and that it would be easy to play and beneficial. So that's about right, Lisa, right? About a year. And then it took another probably 6 months-ish or so to, you know, find a designer and get all the fonts right and, you know, figure out where to get them made. And, you know, so from, you know, start to finish, about a year and a half or so to get it, you know, from our brains out to the public.
Beautiful. And I wanted to say, I really appreciate that you don't shy away from some topics. So the other day I attended on Zoom, I guess a Zoom meeting where we were playing the game. And the first card that was pulled out was the one about suicide. I don't know if it's worded in that way, but basically if you were to kill yourself, like how would you do it? In the different ways.
So just to let you know, Lorena, so we felt like suicide was an important topic to include because there's so much shame surrounding it, especially whether you yourself have had suicidal thoughts or attempts or whether you've lost someone to suicide. So we really wanted to make sure the topic was discussed. But we did in our next draft of it, we did change that question because it is pretty triggering to specifically ask. And we were concerned. We got quite a bit of feedback, or at least a little feedback, that like, can we ask that in a different way? And so we changed the we changed the question to ask about celebrity suicides that impacted you. Mm-hmm. So it took a bit away of that triggery, how would you do it imagery that I think can be a little dangerous, to talking about, you know, a suicide that impacted you. So that way people are still having the conversation, mm-hmm. but maybe it's a little, we didn't want it to come off at all flippant on that particular topic. So.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Cause I was going through my card last night and I didn't find it, but I thought I had skipped it. But the lady who was hosting the Zoom meeting had it. And I thought it was interesting that was the first card that was pulled. And I was like, oh, whoa, like, getting right to it. But yeah, I think that's a better way of, you know, maybe not putting people on the spot, because it can definitely be triggering in many different ways. But still going around that. That's actually one of the cards that was pulled when my boyfriend and I played the other day. And I know that for him, Anthony Bourdain, what it just like really affected him. So we started talking about other deaths, you know, that he was affected by, but it's a really deep one. So I wanted to go over maybe some of our favorite cards. I have a few here, but if you guys, I don't know if you have them available or just know them off the top of your head.
We have so many favorites. One of the questions that we really, that always gets a big conversation, I'll say, is after you die, how long should your significant other wait before dating?
That one was also pulled with my boyfriend. all the good ones.
Oh, we have to hear the answer.
Well, you know, we actually had talked about that in the past, because I don't shy away from it. So yeah, no, we both agreed. It doesn't matter, you know, like whenever the other person feels comfortable in starting something new, that's okay. Love is love, you know, be happy.
I had just asked my husband this question again, because he's read through all these, of course. He kind of helped with adding some humor into some of them. And so, you know, after you die, how long should your significant other wait before dating? So the answers are A, love is unpredictable, grab it when you can. B, 6 months to a year, and then it's fair game. Or C, at least a few years, or you better believe you'll be haunted. And he's now said that I need to wait 3 years, and then I can start dating, but every night I have to have a candlelight vigil for him with the new person that I'm dating for 6 months. So that person really understands that it'll always be him.
That is so specific and hilarious. I know. I love that.
And of course he's joking. And yet I know should something happen to him, I will always remember that. Of course he did give his blessing, and in his heart, he's answered something around more like 6 months to a year is how he feels about it. But I just love that we now have had such a rich conversation about it, and filled with laughter, and I know, Lori, that topic is one that you and Joe hadn't discussed, right?
No, we hadn't. And, you know, it's, I knew him so well, and I know in my heart that he would want me to be happy and want me to go on and find love. But, you know, we never had that conversation. So, you know, not that I ever needed his blessing or permission. But, you know, there was a little part of me that, you know, had wished that we had that conversation, just to, you know, to hear it from him, and, you know, to know that that's, you know, what he would have wanted. So, yeah, and that's, you know, probably why this card came about, so that it gives people a chance to have that conversation ahead of time. And for me, you know, my answer would be, you know, 6 months to a year, then it's fair game. Because I feel like, you know, those first few months, you know, they're in that grief zone. There is just so much going on that to introduce, you know, dating and love and whatnot, you know, for me personally, you know, that was not on the radar, even though people would ask, you know, 4 or 5 months in, are you dating? And it's like, wait, what? Am I what? Like, am I breathing and putting on pants is what you should be asking me.
Right. I'm not thinking about that right now.
Yeah, no. I mean, so, you know, everyone grieves differently. Everyone falls in love differently. But, you know, for me personally, you know, just to have that, you know, that buffer of 6 months to a year, just, you know, to be able to process what has happened and then be able to open up, you know, my heart to somebody else would be my answer.
I want to hear one of your favorite cards, Lori. I just want to make sure that I'm not taking one of yours. So you go first.
Because you have been doing that this whole time.
Yeah, no, I'm just being safe.
Well, and I can tell you, out of 112 cards, I bet right off the bat, Lisa could guess which one is one of my favorites.
Yes.
Let's see. How well do you know her?
Do you believe in signs?
Yes.
Oh,
talk about it all the time. Was that going to be yours, Lorena?
No. Tell me more.
So the card is: signs from beyond the grave are a comforting validation that souls live on. B, probably just a coincidence, I think, maybe. Or C, not real. Once you're gone, there's no way to phone home. So I love this card because, you know, I've gone through all the answers in different phases. Before I had the experience of losing my husband, I would have said, C, you know, that's not, you don't, there's, it's coincidence. And then when these very distinct, timely, powerful signs kept coming into my life. He is such a strong presence of a soul, is making me know that I am here. I am watching. I am, you know, I am with you. You are on the right track. So I had so many that I could no longer, you know, say, oh, that's just a coincidence, I think. And they are just, to me, that comforting validation that, you know, I don't understand it, but I love it because, you know, when it comes, it's, you know, it doesn't come when I'm like looking for it. Like, I really need you to flicker that light, or I really need you to, you know, let me know you're here. And it's like, mm-hmm. no, but you know, in those moments of just feeling, you know, that, you know, at one of my kids, you know, first day of school or an anniversary or whatnot, just those very special days, these very distinctive and special signs have come. So very comforting.
Oh, I love that so much. I didn't think we would get into that topic, but one of the ones I picked is sort of ish related to it. So it's if you could send one post-death message from beyond, what would you tell your family? Okay, so I've always been really interested in the afterlife. I'm unsure of where I stand with it. I want to believe it, but there is always the skeptical side of me that's like, no, it's all bullshit. So, if I could do this, I was talking to my boyfriend about this actually, and we both were like, yeah, well, we would just probably come back and tell people whether the afterlife exists or not, you know, with certainty. 'Cause most people have experiences, you know, I've had some people on the podcast come on and talk about their near-death experiences. And obviously people who have seen signs and, you know, mediums that talk to spirits, it's all over the place. But for me, if I knew, you know, if I could do it myself, or if someone that I actually trusted in my life could come back and be like, girl, it's real. It's funny because when I was younger, I told my grandma, I was like, listen, when you die, I need you to come back and tell me whether there's an afterlife. And don't forget, this was like over 10 years ago. She's still alive though. So I don't know if she's going to remember, but I'm going to assume that when she dies, memory is not going to be an issue because you're no longer in this physical body and somehow you'll remember. So I'll be waiting. I will be waiting. That's all I got to say. And the other one that I really liked is the secret ink one. At the moment of death, a secret tattoo appears on your body that symbolizes something you stood for or believed in. What is it and where is it? Honestly, I don't even know what the answer would be to that, but I love the fact that that's a question because it really makes you question what's one thing you really stand for in this life and what is it that you want to show others, you know? I don't know. The first thought that came to mind when I saw that was something vulgar because I like cursing, but something like live it the fuck up or something like that, you know? I don't know where, but somewhere visible. Because I think that too is kind of like the whole thing behind this podcast. It's like, if you talk about death, you'll be able to live a better life, knowing that your time could be up any minute. So I don't know. I really like that one.
And I think that would be the perfect time for a face tattoo. I'm just saying.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
You're going to do it. Do it
for a face tattoo.
You know, I do want to be tattooed all over except my face, but I'm a flight attendant and I can't have visible tattoos. Otherwise, live at the fuck up would be right here on my forehead.
The time of death. Yeah. Wait, I want to know Lisa's because I don't think she shared this with me. So I'm going to put you on the spot, Lisa.
The tattoo?
You know,
yes.
Every time this question comes up, it stirs something in me of like kind of unrest because I feel like what is that thing? I mean, it's kind of related, Lorena, to your question that you asked us to prepare for, you know, in terms of what our message would be. And I mean, for me, my passion to get people talking about end of life is probably the thing that I would want that to be the message. Like talking about it isn't what caused my death or something where that's just trying to get people to open up these conversations. I feel like that's like having those hard questions and being able to ask those hard questions and being willing to listen to people's answers and that sort of thing is really what I believe in so strongly. So what that tattoo looks like. Yeah. I don't know. I do believe it should be on the face though. I mean, just like.
Right.
I mean, that's the time.
We all die or, you know.
Yes. Yes. I think basically we're just all meant to have face tattoos in this conference call. Right.
Yeah.
What's yours, Lori? What's your face tattoo?
Well, see, I already know my tattoo at the time of death, so it'll have to include the face then now. But and before I tell it, I think that, you know, the interesting thing is in grief, I realized a lot of people after they've lost someone, there's this pull to actually physically get a tattoo to honor the person who's died. It can be, you know, I've seen some really creative, you know, their actual deceased actual handwriting, you know, that they've written, you know, the person's name or a note, or some people even go as far as getting, you know, the picture of their face, but I wouldn't do that. But you know, I've thought about doing what kind of came about during my grief process that was symbolic to me and Joe was this ginormous purple dragon. And reason being is, you know, the color purple is, you know, symbolic of pancreatic cancer. And I feel like, you know, losing him and going through my grieving process, just it was so horrendous, but yet so eye-opening and so giving of growth. And there were so many gifts there. And part of, you know, the depths of that grieving process involved, you know, sort of feeling like this beast of a dragon. It sounds kind of crazy, but, you know, there were times where, you know, I had to armor up and I felt like, you know, just this huge beast. And there was times where, you know, there was so much anger and rage that, you know, this fire was coming out of me. And, you know, I see dragons as sort of these, you know, when they need to be brave and strong, they appear. And when they don't, they're not there. And that's really how I kind of felt through, you know, the process. So at one point, you know, I was all ready to get that and I kind of chickened out. But at the time of death, you know, it would be that, you know, entire back and wings, and I'll say, let's get that tail up and we'll go ahead and do the tail up or something on the face as well. So, wow. Or maybe some fire breathing coming off.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I love that so much.
You know, Lori is,
be nice.
We just talked about that. I want to tell you.
Be nice, Lisa.
I was actually going to be really, really, tender just then. Okay. You killed it.
All right. Sorry.
Now she won't be.
Lori taught me a lot about grief and supporting her in her grief because she is a fierce, brave soul who, admittedly, I, even though I'm a social worker and I know to work through something, you have to feel all the feels, right? I struggle with that sometimes. I like to distract myself, probably more than I should. And Lori, she she went with her instincts and she just let herself feel and feel fully. And sometimes to the point where I was like, Lori, okay, just a little distraction, just a tiny bit, you know. I'm just so impressed and proud that we developed such a friendship out of this, because I look to Lori as someone that I admire in really understanding that grief is such hard work, but that there's so much beauty and growth that can come out of these really hard losses. And she's shown me that, and it's encouraged me in my grief and my experiences by watching her. So that's what I was going to say, Lori.
Oh, that was super nice.
I love it.
Thank you.
Our sappy moment. Thank you, Lorena.
It had to be there. I love that. But yeah, I also struggle sometimes with deaths and outwardly expressing my emotions. Recently, and a friend that died recently, that was not a problem. But before that, it's always been kind of like bottled up for me. And now that we were talking about tattoos and expressing grief and all this, it reminded me with this last death, I did get a tattoo, not related to the person, but when I was getting it, it was a way for me to process my pain, because feeling the pain of the tattoo somehow helped, which yeah. I hadn't been able to link those two things together in the past. I have other tattoos that I just got just because, but I thought it's such an interesting way of processing things. For some people that helps. I'm one of them. So to shift gears a little bit, I wanted to hear about kind of like the craziest places that you ladies have brought the death deck with you, just to play and see how things turn out, like bars, birthday parties, dinners, I don't know. Tell me. And people's reactions.
All of the above.
Oh, cool.
I think Lori and I both have, you know, a death deck in our bag and many in our car, and so they're always available. Mm-hmm. I have a wine bar in my neighborhood that I'm a regular at, I'll say, and it's a cute little bar and such a community that I'm missing fiercely right now in the time of COVID, that community. But I bring the death deck in there and just pick a couple cards and start up conversations with people. And it's always, I mean, occasionally people will turn away and be like, ah, I'm not talking about that. Mm-hmm. That's rare though. Most of the time people jump on and they all have opinions and they all have ideas. Usually in that kind of setting, I'm asking the questions about like ghosts and mediums and kind of not too personal, so that people will just start the conversation. So that's one place that I've talked in breweries, and my family's in Michigan, and so making my family play together.
Yeah, making them.
Making them, which turned into a really great time. But you know, it's even within your own family, it's hard sometimes to get people to talk. I think that's my book club. Anywhere I go, we talk about.
Right. You are the brand.
Yes.
We are the faces of.
Yes. I live the brand. Yes.
And I would say early on, one of my most interesting experiences, aside from all of those, was we were invited to a gaming convention, but it was really great. More.
Whoa. Interesting.
I couldn't go.
Yeah, Lisa bailed on me.
Mm.
No. But it was, you know, it was kind of a odd like fit at first. I'm like, well, okay, because it was a gaming school, like for homeschool and, you know, different unique games that, you know, kids of all ages and teens and adults could play. So it was, you know, sort of this weekend where, you know, you could go with your family and then just check out like a library, all these different games and whatnot. So they found us because the person who was running it really loved our game. And so I'm like, well, okay, we're not really, you know, the homeschool game type. We're more of like, you know, but heck, you know what? Let's do this. We're 13 plus, and you know, if they want to play, then by all means. So it was really interesting to be there. You know, I got you know, a lot of interesting looks. I actually demoed the game, and you know, our people found us, which was great. I mean, there was, you know, a number of people that, like Lisa said, just turned away and walked away. And, you know, kids would come over and be interested in the, you know, in the graphic of the front of it and then run away. But I had some really great conversations with some people who, you know, found us, you know, so our people find us. But more interesting from that is that, you know, I've had some friends that have the game at home, and there's been a handful of people that have told me, you know, that they're 12, 13, 14 year old kids, you know, have wanted to play the game, and they've let them play the game, and they have really enjoyed playing the game. It's just such an interesting, unique conversation. And I've just been so touched by that, you know, these kids would, you know, pull that game and then, you know, hang in there for some cards and start, you know, talking about it and having these conversations. So that would be the most interesting for me.
I love that. I love that it's reaching the population, the part of the population that wouldn't otherwise see it. Because I obviously, when I see it a lot now, is in the death positive community. And we're not really the ones that need to be playing it. I mean, maybe, but you know what I mean? It has to expand. And it needs to reach those people who would never in their right mind want to talk about death at a bar or at a dinner. So I'm interested in, I don't know, like maybe I'll put together like a Zoom playing the death deck kind of meeting with people. I have a lot of friends that want to be in my podcast, and I think this might be a perfect way to get them in without being like, well, you're not going to be the main guest. But, you know, yeah. So recently, actually yesterday, a friend of mine and I hosted our first Death Cafe. And, you know, it's not supposed to be scripted or have an agenda, but we were like, okay, well, if people stay quiet for like more than like a minute or two, we'll just pull out a card, you know, have a few cards pulled out. And it's such a way to start, get the conversation rolling. But I think it would be really cool to get, I don't know, college friends and just people that are now home, you know, do like a Zoom party and bring out the deck and maybe record it, make it into a little episode so people can see how it's actually fun and it's not morbid. So I don't know, just an idea. I've been thinking about it in the shower last night. I was like, I need to do this. I need to start, like, I just want to really promote conversation around death. And I think this is the perfect way to do it. I wanted to hear about stories of people and families that you have impacted, some of your favorite ones.
The wine bar that I had mentioned a little bit ago, when I brought a deck in there, and this couple was very interested, and they said, "We see you over here playing this game." And so I just gave them a stack of cards and they brought it back to their table and they were just playing it on their own. And they came up to me when they were leaving, you know, a short while later and said, "Oh my God, we finally figured out who we want to leave our son to. We've been putting off doing our will because we couldn't come to a decision on that." And like, you had a question, you know, that facilitated that conversation, and they came up with that. And you know, in there, after having a couple glasses of wine, they had even scheduled an appointment with the attorney that they're friends with to like make it happen, because they were trying to capitalize and take action. And I mean, in our dream world, that's what happens. I mean, it's not just conversation. There's actually some action taken. So that was that was one of my all-time favorites. My second favorite that's just kind of personal is that my mom came out last year and we played one-on-one and I hand selected questions because about things that she doesn't usually just bring up. And I learned so much about her and it was such a special conversation and she was willing. We just both needed a little help. And I came home and kind of journaled about it so I would remember because, so often, you got to find ways to really remember those things that are those important conversations. So those are two of my highlights.
Right. I want to, next month, I'm planning on probably going back to Tampa, which is where my parents are. And since I've been working on the podcast, I'm all into like, okay, let's get all our stuff ready. So I'm putting together my 5 wishes and I bought 2 for my roommate and my boyfriend. And then I bought 2 in Spanish for my parents and I sent it over to their house. And my mom's like, what is this? She's like, oh, okay, I know what it is. But my mom is the type of person that does not at all like talking about death. So I'm just waiting until we're there in person. And I think I'm going to bring out the deck and, translate it in Spanish for them and make it into a game because I think that's like the only way my mom will go for it.
And I really recommend hand selecting the cards. Yeah. You know, when there's a specific conversation that you want to make happen, then, pick the cards that are going to best facilitate that so that you get the conversation or some sort close to what you're looking for.
Right, right.
And I think with that, it's important to note too that, that was something we took in consideration when we created the game and made it multiple choice, because that was the thing that we weren't finding in other games. And what we were finding is that it was open-ended questions. And oftentimes these open-ended questions are very big. And if you haven't thought about them, or even if you have, that could be an entire afternoon in and of itself of one sort of topic. So we created it with that in mind to have this multiple choice element for 2 reasons. One, if you hadn't thought about it, it would give you sort of a place to start aligning yourself to think about it. Like it wasn't just this open, like, I don't know. It gives you sort of that, do you, don't you, or maybe, and it gives you a place to sort of start. And then also the way the game is structured is, it allows for people to not be have that feeling of being put on the hot seat. So you're not just asking, well, what would you think or what would you do? It's more, we're going to play this game. I'm going to write down my answer. You're going to write down your answer. And then we're going to try to guess each other's answers. So then it becomes not just about one person, it's both of you. And it becomes more of a element of conversation.
Yes. And I love that piece of the game because even me who has thought of death for a very long time, they're huge questions that maybe I hadn't thought of before and I had no idea where to start. So I was like really thankful that there were options to begin with. And even if none of the ABC work for you, it gives you a starting point to be like, well, no, none of those, but I would prefer this instead.
Yeah, we love that when people have a D and then they, give their opinion or all of the above or none of the above, like they just, kind of create, oh, I'm a hybrid of A and C, but that's really what it's all about. It's like, let's talk about as much as we can. And it gives a good jumping point for that.
Right, right. And what does it feel like to be changing so many lives? I feel like you guys are superheroes. It's so badass.
Oh, go on. I love that.
That's so funny. That's Lori's response. Mine, like, I got a little teary when you just said that. Like, it feels so good.
But how has it impacted your lives, doing this kind of work?
I mean, it's incredibly rewarding to see people use the game and to get feedback that it's helped and that it's been that all the different ways that people are using it. Death doulas are using it to initiate conversations and advanced care planning people and people who manage estates and finances and like all of these, and then just family and friends. And it, it feels like we're a piece. I mean, there's a great movement right now of other people who are also creating wonderful events and other tools to try to get these conversations going. And the community around us is so supportive, and I've just been so just overwhelmed with how good the people are that are in this space, in terms of just supporting each other and attending each other's events and lifting each other up and trying to be, we're all working towards the same goal of changing conversations about death and reducing the stigma. So it's also an honor to be part of that community and to meet all these great people who are trying to do the same thing. How do you feel, Lori?
Exactly what you said. No, but, and more. No, it is incredibly, it's incredibly rewarding. It's something that I never really saw myself doing. I mean, I was in production for many years and writing, and that was, you know, to be in the end of life community with a game to talk about death was not anything that was on, you know, my whiteboard of plans. But it just, you know, after everything I went through, it just, you know, really became this calling that, you know, I didn't want anyone else to have to go through, you know, what I did at end of life and through grief. And it's like, well, what can I do to help? And that just, it feels, you know, so incredible to be, you know, to be doing that and to see people, you know, able to, you know, be more at peace and to be able to finally open up and have these conversations. So I'm incredibly proud of the work we've done and so grateful to have such an incredible partner in doing all of this.
I love it. You guys are meant to be, you were meant to meet, you were meant to create this game. And thank you so much for having done that. So before I let you ladies go, you know, there are two questions that I ask all my guests. So number one is, if you were to die tomorrow, how would you like to be remembered?
I'll start. I was thinking about that this morning, and it's a really neat exercise to reflect on that. I kind of found myself going down a few rabbit holes in that, but I'd say I want to be remembered for my kindness and compassion and my love for nature and beauty and good wine. And being a supportive friend that's willing to be there when times are hard, that makes other people feel valued. And as someone who's passionate about changing the conversations about death, dying, and grief, and who demonstrates how to gently ask hard questions, and who's somebody that'll show up and hold space for others when they need it.
I love it. What about you, Lori?
And you are living that, Lisa.
Yes.
So. Thanks, Lori.
So you. And for me, you know, I would want to be remembered as, you know, a true optimist. I love being an optimist. and really someone who, you know, made a difference by helping people embrace their own mortality to live richer, fuller lives. And hopefully by sharing personal stories, I want to be remembered as someone who, you know, could also help people along their grieving journeys.
Mm, beautiful. And both of you are doing it. So congrats.
Yeah, she is the optimist and I'm the realist, and we balance each other in that way. But I appreciate and love her.
Realist or pessimist, Lisa?
Ooh.
Realist. Oh, realist.
She called you out.
It depends on the day.
Definitely realist. You know, I'm kidding.
I love that. And the second question is, if you could compile all the knowledge and wisdom that you've gained throughout your life into a message that you'd like to share, what would that message be?
You know, I found this to kind of, it's kind of similar. There's a quote by the a Tibetan monk that says, keep death by your side. And, you know, working in end of life, I really have seen how much we take for granted. And I think, you know, currently as a world, we're seeing that during this pandemic, that all of these things that we took for granted that we are able to do in this time with loved ones that we're not currently having. So I think when we continue to like keep it in our forefront that and keep death by our side, we do appreciate and live life more fully. And I think I find that hard to do in practice sometimes. I think your life, you get very bogged down by the day to day. But it takes that like that mindful practice of saying this today is today and today is what I have. That would be my message.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it really helps to have something as a reminder, you know, like memento mori. Right. So for me, even though it has not been working out that way, but I got a tattoo of a skull for that purpose, you know, to every time I see it, think of that. Yeah, at the moment, I'm not needing it because I think about death daily since this I'm doing so much research on it for the podcast. But I think having a visual representation would really help for some people. So, all right, your turn, Lori.
Okay. Well, when I thought of this, I thought of my kids and what message I would want to leave behind for them. I mean, it could also apply to others, but specifically to my kids, you know, that when I die, you know, to grieve and to grieve fully and not avoid the feelings that are going to come, but instead take the time that's needed to process a loss and know that it is... That process is so bittersweet. It can be so bittersweet. And just to make note of when, you know, the sweet really starts to outweigh the bitter is when, you know, to just, you know, go live your life and live fully and don't, you know, let grief, you know, continue to weigh you down. Yes, go through it and process it, but then, you know, use it and as a reminder to just, you know, to live and to live in joy and to live fully and happily.
Thank you, ladies, so much for sharing your game, your messages, your wisdom. And how can people find you and also how can people buy the game?
Yes, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. And we can be found at, we have a website, thedeathdeck.com. where you can purchase the game. And we are on all of the social media channels at The Death Deck.
Hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, please make sure to subscribe. And if you'd like, leave a review on iTunes or wherever you consume your podcasts. It really helps spread the message. Also, if you'd like to connect with me, follow me on Instagram @conversationsondeath. And I will talk to you guys soon. Take care.